The word ballistic scares people, particularly when it comes to cost. Ballistic, blast, and break-in. These are the sorts of events that are happening on nearly a daily basis, unfortunately, in this country.
Of those three Bs, ballistics, blasts, break-ins, what would you say are the most common these days?
Ballistic events, on average, we're getting 8 to 12 a month, so every 3 days.
What's kind of the why behind these attacks and why they exist in the first place?
Certainly ballistics and break-ins for the purpose of copper theft and other valuable materials. So we just simply make barriers that make that a lot harder to do.
What happens when you shoot a substation with a World War I era rifle? We're about to find out. Hey everyone, and welcome to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. Not too long ago, we had a conversation on this show about a stark reality. Physical attacks on substations are rising in frequency and in sophistication, and with almost 80,000 transmission substations here in the U.S., those attacks could create major risks for severe outages and damage to the grid as a whole. So how do we protect substations from physical attacks? Well, we learn how modern substation walls perform under real-world attack conditions. That's what we're digging deeper into today. And that's what 3B Protection, which helps protect substations from malicious attacks, recently did. The company held a demonstration event outside of Las Vegas to make this issue of physical security very, very real, firing everything from those rifles I mentioned up to 50 caliber weapons at their ballistic wall with an audience right there. Now, want to know what the live fire demos actually show and why real-life situation testing matters and what utility leaders should prioritize when they spec and procure hardened infrastructure? Me too. So we are bringing back Brent Warzoka, VP of Sales at 3B Protection, to fill us in. Brent, how are you today? How have you been?
I'm doing great, Kinsey. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited for this conversation. This is a really interesting one. I will note at the jump here that this is also a very visual conversation, so I highly recommend checking this out on our YouTube channel. But I'm excited to learn more about this experience that you guys pulled off and what you learned from it. And I do want to note quickly before we jump in that this episode is brought to you by our partners at 3B Protection. So stick around to hear more about the exceptional work the 3B team is doing to help power orgs protect people, property, critical assets, all that good stuff. So Brent, it's been a while since we've had you on the show. For those of you who might have missed Brent's first stop by Power Perspectives, would you mind reintroducing yourself and sharing a little bit more about the work that you do at 3B?
Thank you, Kinsey. As you mentioned, right now I help look after sales for 3B Protection. I've been in the security industry since 2004, almost all of that time on the electronic side, the integrated side, with a couple of different companies, most recently Convergent and their utility-focused team, and then came over to work for 3B directly in October of last year. So kind of moved over to the structural side. So a little bit different for me from hardware and software like I had been in for so many years, but enjoying it very much.
And tell me a little bit more about the kind of work that 3B does. You know, I mentioned a little hint at some of the work that you do, but I would love to just hear the sort of high level. What's the goal? Who are the clients?
Well, we make barriers pretty simply is what we do, right? And they can be in the forms of walls or louvers, vehicle gates, man gates. But what they protect against are the three Bs, ballistic, blast, and break-in. These are the sorts of events that are happening on nearly a daily basis, unfortunately, in this country. Not blast so much, but certainly ballistics and break-ins for the purpose of copper theft and other valuable materials. So we just simply make barriers that make that a lot harder to do.
Makes perfect sense to me. And I want to hear a little bit more about how these barriers operate in the real world. You know, we talk about this in theory on the show. You guys tested it in practice. I want to talk a little bit more about this event that you pulled off to make these physical threats to the grid feel very, very real. So tell me about this event, the kind of the why, the format, who attended, what did they walk away with? What did you learn here?
The why we do this is pretty simple, right? You can put anything you want on a data sheet or talk about it at a trade show or whatever, but this is kind of a prove it scenario for us, right? Because this is important stuff. So, you know, what we will do periodically is have these live fire events where we rent out a gun range, hire a range master who arrives with a variety of weapons and calibers and ammunitions and all that sort of stuff, right? And anybody that would like to come and see what the product actually does live and in person, fire the weapons if they choose to, has the ability to do that. So, you know, for me, even before I joined 3B, I went to some of these events and they're super impactful, right? You go to trade shows and after 22 years in the business, all of those trade shows run together. I'm not sure I could quote you a single thing that I remember from any one of them outside of my introduction to 3B a few years ago, but they kind of run together. But what's unique about these events is you never forget them. Anyone that goes to these, I mean, you're firing off a 50 cal if you want to. You're watching car bombs explode. You're inspecting this wall afterwards. And so you never forget this. And not only do you never forget it, you go back home and you're talking to everybody about it, whether they're in the industry or not. I mean, you're hanging around the fire pit talking to your buddies about it in some cases. So that's why we do them, is really is prove it. And we know that they're memorable and they're impactful.
Yeah. I mean, you walk around the floor at an event like DistribuTech. I think I probably ate 100 of those little white Lifesaver mints because everybody has them. You know, it really, I'm sure, makes a big difference to do something that feels singular, that feels really, really different.
I will tell you, in fairness, though, we do have mints with 3B branded mints if you'd like any. I don't have any at arm's reach at the moment, but I can get you some.
Hey, do you work in the power industry if you don't have branded mints, right? No, I would love to talk a little bit more here, Brent, about paint us a visual of some of the different munitions used and the impacts of the blast. You know, how did this all go? Can you walk me through it and paint the picture?
Sure. We kind of start low caliber, right? People are nervous. And in this case, particularly so, because most of the folks that attended were from overseas. You know, quick backstory here is we were at Convergence utility focused event in Clearwater in January. And many of Convergence utility colleagues from Europe and elsewhere were there attending as well. And so they said, hey, we're going to be back over in the States in Las Vegas next month in preparation for Convergence national meeting. And that meeting starts on Sunday, and they needed something to do for team building on Saturday, the day before it started. And we said, hey, well, you might be in luck here. I mean, we've already got a wall set up at a range that's an hour outside of Las Vegas. Let's see if we can pull off an event where we host you. So these were folks from overseas, and I suspect, not quite the gun culture that we have. And they were like kids in a candy store as we were starting off with, 9mm, fully automatic 9mm, then progressing up to more high-powered rifles like 7.62 and 30-06 and eventually the 50 caliber. So, we do a wide variety of caliber of bullets to give them whatever experience they want to, but it kind of culminates with the 50 cal at the end.
Yeah, and I mean, you shoot it at the wall. Like, what was kind of the feeling there? You said these are like kids in a candy shop. What did you learn? What did some of these people walk away with?
Well, what we learned is that after three such events, so I'll go into the Wayback Machine here for a second. So this particular wall and the man door that's embedded into the middle of it was initially stood up at this site in January of 2025. So we had 2 days in at that time frame where we had a variety of clients, customers, SMEs in the industry, whomever wanted you to come out and fire the weapons. And we fired over the course of 2 days an average of 1,500 to 1,800 bullets, variety of calibers, as we mentioned, over those 2 days. So, 3,000 rounds or maybe a little bit more. As well as a car bomb each of those 2 days. So that wall had already been put through the paces to a certain extent. And then when we did on day three, we were really curious about how long this wall is going to stand up and what it's going to be able to withstand. And so it just sat there in the desert, totally untended to, for 13 months. And then we went back with the Convergent folks in February of this past year and did the same thing all over again. 1,500 rounds, car bomb. And for us, what was super enlightening and impactful and important, and I'll at some point in this video, we'll share a little walk around video that I recorded, where after close to 5,000 rounds and three car bombs, you walk around to the back of this and nothing gets through the wall. There's some scratches on the paint from shipping. There was a little bit of unknown whether one of the 50 caliber bullets got through. I thought that it might have, but it looks like it was still lodged in and there was a little bit of chip in the back. There are definitely some holes in the door because that's a UL level 8 door. And so eventually the 50 cal was able to puncture it. It wasn't really designed to withstand that. But for the wall itself, it was able to endure 3 days, 13 months, three car bombs, and the most visible damage is one of the caps on top of the columns flipped upside down in place. So for us, who in the business of protecting critical infrastructure and guaranteeing that we can do it, it was a good day.
I imagine so, because it feels, I would also imagine, pretty unlikely that a substation, a utility substation, would undergo all of that in one fell swoop, right?
100%. The UL standards are what they are, and they're minimal. And I guess I have some mixed feelings about whether they should be enhanced. Certainly, that would be potentially great for our business if that was the case. But what I really worry more about is whether or not a prospect, an end user, a utility themselves understands how minimal they are and what they might be purchasing. So for us, who are used to advertising the highest levels of resilience, to be able to prove to them with videos shows and events like this that we can guarantee it and we can do it. That's what gets us excited.
Yeah, I think this is a good moment too to talk a little bit about some of the added value of really going in above and beyond when we're talking about some of these, you know, baseline testing standards, and also why doing it in these real life situation testing scenarios really matter. So you mentioned that some of these standards that exist for the grid today might not necessarily be up to snuff. I would love to hear a little bit more about that. You know, where do you kind of see that they might fall short, and how can utilities take that into account as they're planning out what protection looks like for their businesses?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I'd say it quite that way, up to snuff. I mean, the standard is what it is, right? And establishes a common baseline that's easily understandable. But, you know, what we try to do is educate about what we refer to as our RLS, or real life situation testing, which we feel much more closely approximates what would potentially happen out in the real world versus a controlled test environment where, congratulations, you stopped, you know, five shots of a 7.62 rifle in one in a square foot. That's great. Or maybe one shot of a 30-06. But that's not really what's going to happen in real life. No one's going to, with malicious intention, start firing at a substation one round or five rounds and go, oh, nothing got through, I guess I'll move on down the road. They're going to unload the clip or clips until they get through. So if we're able to guarantee that if that clip is of a 7.62 caliber, you know, our panel will be able to withstand up to 2,500 shots. If it's UL level 9, a 30-06, it's going to be 2,000 shots. Or God forbid, someone with a 50 caliber is unloading. The panel is guaranteed to stop up to 500 such shots. So that's the educational piece that is really probably my number one priority in terms of what I do for 3B is getting that messaging out there.
So, you know, Brent, this sounds like it was something that was very, very interesting, especially for the people who were on the ground at the event, watching all of this happen in real life. How do you communicate the importance and the effectiveness of something like this to the folks who couldn't make it there or who were not there on the ground watching all of it happen?
Interesting question. I did not intend going into the day to take a video of both sides of the wall that got torn up over the course of 3 days, and then the backside where nothing got through except for the door. I didn't go there intending to do that. I'm not sure why the idea struck me on the way out, but I did. And I just a couple weeks ago posted that video on LinkedIn along with my thoughts about UL and RLS testing, and, you know, described what happened over the course of those 3 days over 13 months, and then posted the video for all the world to see. And I kind of struggle at times with LinkedIn, understanding how to use it for business purposes, or is it just more social media type of usage. But I have never, ever had a more enthusiastic response to that particular post with the video included, reposting, people commenting. There was one organization, the procurement officer of a energy consulting company, the procurement officer reposted, tagged one of her guys, the substation design engineer. Never heard of either of them or their organization, but that was the sort of effect that the video had. So for me, that's the best way that I could possibly do it outside of someone being there in person.
It is one of the rare benefits of all of these many social platforms is that you do get to have this visual cue to people who might not be able to be in the room or at the range with you. I'm curious too if there were any sort of, you know, aha moments that came along with that experience, whether for people who were there or for people who were in the comments and on your LinkedIn.
No, because the wall just sits there and does its job. You know, the aha moment would be if it didn't, and then we'd have to figure out why and how to improve it. So over the course of 3 days, it just undergoes this barrage and just remains steady and does what it's supposed to do. So no, I wouldn't really say there were any aha moments, and for that reason.
Yeah. And like so many other cases in the utility industry, that's a good thing, right? You know, I remember doing an episode recently about VPPs, and the headline was that nothing happened. Everything operated business as usual, which is great news. And the utility industry doesn't always, you know, sell papers, but that is what we're after. I want to talk here, too, about this idea of, perseverance, persistence, and we're looking at some of these threats that might, come across these substations on the grid. You mentioned unloading clips until they get through is kind of the attitude here for a lot of these threats. Tell me a little bit more, just so we're super clear on what the main goal is for some of these potential threats when attacking a substation. What are they after? what are they trying to get through for? What's kind of the why behind these attacks and why they exist in the first place?
So I have to be a little cautious about the information that we share, because a lot of it originates with the EISAC, right? They're member organizations that feed them information. They congregate it and then send it out to partner organizations like ours. And much of it is restricted, so I can talk about it in only a general way. But, you know, the why is... there's a variety of whys these days. Some are right-wing extremists, some are anti-government folks. Now we're now seeing anti-data center folks. Anywhere where they can be disruptive to our civilization, our domestic civilization, that's really the motivation. There are some that believe there's a civil war that's imminent and they're in a good position to win it, so they just assume get on with it. And taking out power from a substation is a way that they can create civil unrest and chaos. And there's a pretty well-known incident in the Northwest where these yahoos were shooting up a substation just to take out power so they could go. They thought it would make it easier to rob the local 7-Eleven. So a variety of reasons why, all of them malicious. But having said that, for some time, substations have been not to purpose of attack, but just people out shooting, right? There's a lot of metal in there, and it gives a report back if you successfully hit it. So ballistic events aren't new. The malicious side certainly is, but it's been going on for quite some time. So whether it's malicious or otherwise, obviously the utility has a vested interest in making sure those bullets are stopped at the perimeter.
Of course. And of those three Bs, ballistics, blasts, break-ins, what would you say are the most common these days?
Well, break-in, and it's the least sexy part of what we talk about, right? The blasts obviously are awesome, and it's cool to witness and talk about 50 calibers. But, you know, the day-to-day threat that the utilities face is criminal in the form of breaking in to steal copper, other valuable metals to be resold. That's happening all day, every day. Ballistic events, best we can tell, on average, we're getting 8 to 12 a month, so every 3 days, and those are the ones that are reported in that we have knowledge of. But the break-ins are happening all the time. So that is something that I try to emphasize on presentations and talks like this one, where although it's not super fun to talk about, we've done testing at super high levels that make it nearly impossible to break in through this, especially if coupled with the proper electronic intrusion devices. We delay them so long that would be virtually impossible then to get in and out without having to undergo some sort of encounter with law enforcement or site operations.
So, you know, Brent, with what you mentioned in mind about the prevalence of some of these attacks, the nature of some of these attacks, the importance of this real life situation testing, I think it brings us to an interesting question about the timeline for some of these protective, measures that utilities can take. I would love to hear a little bit more about some of the life cycle elements of these security measures. You know, do they require upgrading? Do they require replacement over an expected period of time? What does that look like?
Well, they shouldn't. And that's why we offer a 30-year warranty on everything that we're selling these days. So in addition to that, you know, part of what you purchase from us when you buy our walls and barriers and gates is an annual inspection. So, you know, if we find any degradation or compromise to the product over the course of those 30 years, then we replace it at no charge to the customer. Obviously, that wouldn't include, acts of violence, acts of God, weather events, and that sort of thing. But, you know, any normal degradation to the wall is taken care of by 3B for up to 30 years.
Quite the warranty. You know, I think there's also an element of this, too, when utility leaders are trying to decide what security measures to take, that I imagine involves cost effectiveness, return on investment. How would you communicate or coach utilities to best, you know, understand the upfront spend that's required to implement these security measures versus the potential savings of having them down the line?
Well, you know, my sense is and has been that the word ballistic scares people, particularly when it comes to cost, right? So now we're talking about, you know, the purchasing component, the actual implementation cost. And so we have some strategies to make it much more palatable for the end user that they may not be aware of. First and foremost is, you know, on a linear foot basis, our product is very comparable to some of the enhanced security fencing they already could be accustomed to purchasing. So that is a key component of the conversation. The other thing that we emphasize is our ability to make the product at least somewhat local to the project site. All that we really care about is that where the product is made, if they can accept our molds before the cement goes into the mold, we send them the secret sauce or the 3B proprietary mix separately, tell them when to put it in the mix before it goes in the mold. So we have strategies to have the product manufactured just down the road from the project site. And that's important because if you're buying thousands of linear feet of anything, whether it's wall or fence or whatever, the shipping costs are going to be considerable. So if your project's in Portland and the product is made in Miami, you got a problem. But if we can make it just down the road, Northern California or Washington or whatever, then that it reduces those costs considerably. And it's very easy construction. It's not conductive in any way, so it doesn't require grounding. We have instances of where once the columns are set in place, that the panels, which go between the columns, can be set in like 200-300 feet a day. So it's actually very simple construction. So, you know, one of my missions is education around the cost. And those are all three very important parts of that conversation.
Yeah, definitely important to keep all of those in mind. And it bears a question, I think, for me of whether you think utilities are kind of doing enough right now across the board. If I were to ask you to kind of make the generalization here, do you think that they're doing enough to maximize security these days? Do you think that there is more work to be done sort of in the norm?
My sense is yes. I think that they're doing all they can. Let's put it that way. They are implementing in many cases for medium and high impact substations what the government tells them have to do, right? So there's a regulating authority that established certain baselines depending on the criticality of the substation. But, you know, in my 20 plus year career, I have had very few things that I have spoken in like a cold call sort of manner to prospects and customers about that generated as much interest and at least having a conversation that the 3B wall has. So, you know, they're interested in it. They understand that even though it's not part of what regulations is mandating here at the moment, that there is a practical marketplace, real world need for it. And so they're very receptive to the conversation. So then as we bake in components of that conversation around cost, which I just talked about a second ago, how the smart ballistic walls could work to make the implementation of the electronic security devices go that much more smoothly and less costly. We find a very receptive audience. So, you know, they're handcuffed to a certain extent by budgetary reasons like any organization would be, but I can tell you they're super interested. I've yet to speak to someone about products like ours that isn't either planning for it, thinking about it, budgeting for it, or in some full-blown implementation. So my short answer is yes.
You know, it makes me curious here. This idea of real-world need, it is very, very clear when you start, you know, get on a cold call with somebody that this is something that they could be very interested in because it feels like such a real-world situation. You've got this RLS testing that you mentioned. Do you think there are any other parts of the utility infrastructure, you know, general pipeline that might benefit from that kind of real world testing or that maybe we could do a better job of showing instead of telling?
Yeah, I mean, we're finding and in fact have contracts with the likes of data centers, right? So, I mean, you folks report every day on the impact the data centers are having onto the grid and the grid's inability to support it in the way that the data centers would like it to. You know, so in many cases, they're not just having a substation on the property, which would be mandatory because of their power needs, but also the actual generation on the property. So we're seeing need to protect data centers for the city. You know, they won't be regulated probably ever in the same way that a critical substation might be in the future from a ballistics perspective. But of course, they don't want to see it have undergo that damage. And so they're protecting it. And then you think about an expanded definition of what critical infrastructure is to a community, right? The jail, the hospital, and other like facilities. You know, protecting the substations that support those facilities, in some cases, even on those properties, finding some interest there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really why we do what we do. Powers everything. We need it to run everything that really, really matters. So I think we are ready now to get into our lightning round, if you are ready for a quick rapid fire section here.
Let's do it.
All right. First question for you. What is your favorite of these tests of ballistics to watch?
That is a coin flip between the car bomb and the 50 caliber for obvious reasons. But I would probably default to the 50 caliber. I've now been to several of these events. Every single one we fired off many times. And you just never get used to the percussion that thing has. No matter how many rounds have been fired off, I still kind of jump a little bit, even when I'm totally expecting it and standing 40 feet away. It's an impressive thing to see.
I can certainly imagine. And I think, Brent, congratulations. I believe you are the first person in history to ever utter the words, "It's a coin flip between the car bomb and the 50 caliber" here on Power Perspective. So thank you. Congratulations.
I'm just a pretty face, Kinsey. They hired me at the 3B for very specific building.
All right. My next question for you. Any insight here on the most realistic explosion in a movie, having seen these explosions happen in real life?
I'm a bit of a James Bond nerd, and although Spectre certainly was not the best Daniel Craig movie of his five-movie run, the explosion at Blofeld's compound in Spectre was kind of off the chart. So, and a bad guy got it. So, for me, that was that's probably the best one that I've ever seen.
I love it. All right, final question for you. What is the most impactful single security tweak that a utility can start implementing today or tomorrow?
Well, as you know, utilities don't do anything today or maybe even tomorrow or even in next week. So, you know, things just have a much longer cycle for things to actually take place in the utility world. You know, for me, it's all about education. One thing they can do at no cost to them is just be educated. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, our perception is that the word ballistics are just inherently scares people and for cost reasons. And it does not need to be that way. So, you know, that's what I would offer for someone to do immediately is reach out to us for information. We've got very short presentations that include things like that video and some other products that we sell above and beyond the walls and gates. It's really the education piece. They're not going to do anything tomorrow. But like I mentioned earlier, they are thinking about it. They are planning forward and considering what the implementation is going to eventually look like.
Brent, thank you so much once again for joining us on Power Perspectives. To hear more about this real-world testing was so, so interesting. We will, as I mentioned at the beginning, have lots of video in all of this in this episode. So make sure that you check it out on YouTube too if you are listening in on one of our other listening platforms. Highly recommend getting the visual because this is super cool stuff. It is really, really interesting to see it all happen in real life. And Brent, I really appreciate you stopping by Power Perspectives to share more about what all of this means for utilities. It's been wonderful to hear from you again.
Anytime. My pleasure.
Of course. And as I mentioned at the top here, this episode is brought to you by 3B Protection. 3B Protection is in the business of helping organizations protect their people, property, and critical assets. The last 10 years or so has seen significant ballistic activity in and around electrical substations that are part of the United States' critical infrastructure. 3B offers a line of products to help protect those substations from malicious attacks. 3B has tested their products to the extreme in a way that far exceeds UL minimums, and not just for ballistics. Their walls are thoroughly tested against forced entry, vehicle crashes, and blasts as well. To learn more about 3B and their critical work, head to this episode's show notes. Brent, thank you so much again, and thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into this episode of Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant-Baker, and I will see you next time.